Welcome to the Babbelry,
where translators visit the Tower of Babel.
The Tower of Babel.
The Tower of Babel.
Babel.
Babbelry.
Wading downstream of the poisonous stew, decisions at the top make their way into the ER. I didn't write much in the last week, not because I don't have ideas. The episode that I just released on the Babbelry, in which Dr. Heather Ford and I go into detail about what is happening in the scientific community here and around the world, is truly inspiring. Public support of science and science education is a longtime passion of mine, and I have a lot to say. But I've had my own personal interaction lately with the downstream effects of political decision-making because I have been helping my parents, both of whom have had recent hospital visits. What I saw at the hospital doesn't directly have to do with science funding, but one of the things that Heather and I explored was how the downstream effects of decisions made at the federal level are extremely wide, complex, and to a certain extent unpredictable. A decision here doesn't necessarily just mean a result here. It means sickness in another state, or hospital closing in a nearby town, or even deaths next door. Two hospitals, two experiences. I want to emphasize that my criticism isn't with the caregivers themselves. They are people who want to heal, and that's really important to understand because all hospital employees are under a lot of stress, and when people are under stress, they don't necessarily show their best qualities. My father had his stay in a city hospital, the hospital where that particular city treats its gunshot victims, which are all too common, although, footnote here, not as common as people think. My mother's stay had to be transferred from that same hospital to a nearby regional hospital in a small suburban city. Somehow I had convinced myself, knowing how city hospitals overrun with crisis patients sometimes let things slip through the cracks, that my mother's stay would be better managed, better equipped, better staffed, but that wasn't the case. There are many, many easier ways to make a living than being a nurse or an orderly or even a doctor at a city-run hospital, so I know that everyone wanted to do their jobs well. But everyone we dealt with, from admitting all the way to discharge, had more work than they could handle, and that is by design. The American way of business. For generations now, American business has largely been run under the conservative maxim of pleasing shareholders by cutting the most expensive parts of their operation, often without care for whether those expensive parts were essential. And the largest expense for most businesses is labor, also known as human beings. People need a living wage. People need safe working conditions. They need health care. They need to feel at ease with their colleagues. They need to feel respected. Perhaps mechanizing makes sense in a factory producing widgets. Using machines to do work that, for example, causes repetitive stress injuries, that makes sense. But when it comes to the healthcare business, the people are the business. The people are the customers and the people are the workers. Sure, computerization of the medical industry has had benefits, not the least that nurses now don't have to read doctors' handwriting. But despite the excellent reasons to integrate technology into healthcare, we aren't now, nor will we ever be, in a place where healthcare is better when a human being is not cared for by a human being. We have a deep need for contact, for eye contact, for hands-on contact, for speaking to each other and listening to each other. A need for patient advocacy. So many of the people who end up in hospital emergency rooms are not like my parents. Four of my parents' five adult children live within driving distance of their home. They have grandchildren in the area and grandchildren who would certainly be willing to jump on a plane and fly home if needed. People without the level of support that my parents have are left to navigate the system alone. Years ago, when my mother was editing medical research, she told me about a study of patient advocacy in hospitals. The study impressed upon her that it would be her job, should my father end up in the hospital, to be his advocate. And then, in the way the universe throws irony at us, they did end up in the emergency room soon after, and my mother experienced what we're still experiencing today, every person in the chain of care was very likely to lose important information. And the reason isn't a lack of computers. These days, nurses scoot around the ER with computers on wheels. The problem is that most of the people that she dealt with then in the 90s and we dealt with now in the 2020s have too much work. They want to be good at their jobs. They desperately need to be good at their jobs, but we don't give them what they need, which is more people, more employees, more volunteers, more community support. All those downstream effects eddying into the ER. Which gets back to the downstream effects of DC decisions. It's no accident that the defunding of scientific research is happening when income inequality is at an all-time high. In our government, it is rare to find congresspeople and senators who have worked below a living wage and lived without health care. They are surrounded by people from wealth who are more likely to take money away from the people who need it and park it in the bank accounts of the wealthy who don't need it. The defunding of scientific research at universities is part of this picture. And when I look at this picture, I see what can only be a deliberate attempt to hurt the American public. Even though I stand by this statement, it just doesn't feel right. How could the people leading our government think that having a sicker, poorer population would be good for them? This is where my ability to understand just quits. Hesitating to hope. When I dictated this piece into my phone, out on the trail in a redwood forest, I hesitated, just like Heather Ford hesitated when I asked her what gives her hope amidst all this destruction. I hesitated because I want to believe that modern MAGA are like conservatives of old who, I could convince myself then, didn't really understand what was going to happen downstream from their decisions. They had been taught a pack of lies about the economy and human behavior. The solid research illuminating those lies was not yet available. The fact is that we know people are dying because of funding cuts. We know that giving more money to the rich does not trickle down to the poor. We know that giving money to the poor does not lead them to go out and buy drugs and fancy cars. It leads them to go out and buy food and health care, pay rent, and yeah, maybe a Snickers bar for their kid. Every study of human behavior has shown the same seemingly immutable fact about us. A small percentage of us will always abuse whatever system they are presented with. But most of us are decent. We care about other people. We try to do the right thing. We often don't do the right thing, but we have good intentions. In the present-day Republican Party, the leaders seem to be drawn entirely out of that small percentage of creeps. People who vote for Republicans, I am still willing to believe, are not all creeps. But the party has fostered such a stew of hatred and ugliness that what has risen to the top is poison. That poison is killing the very people who voted for them. All of us are now under the thumb of a federal government completely controlled by these poisoned minds who believe that wealth trumps everything else, that we can find money for billionaires but not for babies. And many in this country are under the thrall of that poison at the state level also. The poison runs downstream. Of course, most of what's being done at the federal level hasn't made it down at our bank of the stream quite yet. But the downstream effects of past decisions showed up in the health care my parents received, for better or for worse. For better, we experienced the downstream effects of wonderful, skillful teachers who offered strong role models as people in a caring profession. Also for better, we saw the amazing result of 70 years of post-war investment in health sciences, from drugs to technology to nurse and doctor training. For worse, we experienced the downstream effects of decisions made on high by lawmakers and large medical corporations, decisions made to benefit the wealthy rather than caregivers and patients. And for as bad as it can get, we will experience the downstream effects of defunding important research that could help people in favor of new funding for ridiculous, disproven crap coming out of the mouth of FKR Jr. And yeah, I got that from my husband. At the creek in the forest, downstream from decision-making. So as I walk, I think, yes, I do want to write about the downstream effects of killing science funding, shutting down important research, driving scientists out of the United States, degrading science education, driving promising young people to skip college, which leads back into the weeds of healthcare because almost any caring profession that earns a living wage requires college. Technicians, nurses, therapists, and doctors all need education. And we will especially need these Americans because the people who are currently going into the entry-level jobs in caring professions in this country are immigrants or children of immigrants. In that way, we're also going to suffer the downstream effects of Stephen Miller bringing his poison and bile into the White House. My parents are both healthy and back at home, and I hope I don't have to visit the hospital with them again anytime soon. But if they do need emergency care, here's what I would want for them and for everyone else. Even the gunshot victims, even the gang members, even the guy wearing a MAGA hat, even the billionaire in a car accident. I wish that the people caring for them have time to care. We have to care. We have to continue to care even when we're lying awake at night thinking, how can I write today? I just don't care anymore. We have to keep caring. We have to keep expressing our care even for the people who have been swindled, even for the people who have been brainwashed into voting for this poison. We have to keep caring about each other. And as I stand at this stream in this redwood forest watching for what will come, I have to believe that the human need to care and be cared for is coded into our genes, that we will resist as people throughout time have resisted, and that we will move forward. Because history tells us that those people swimming in that vile, poisonous stew will themselves end up the victims of their own poison. Thanks to Chris Zabriskie for the calming music, which is entitled, You Fiddle, I'll Burn Rome. Thanks for listening. Listeners, I'd love it if you would go to my Substack and look up this piece, like, and comment on it. When I get a comment, it totally makes my day. And by the way, I always respond.
You've been listening to The Babblery.
The Babblery is produced with support from KSQD Radio in Santa Cruz, California.
Find us on major podcast platforms or at babblery.com.